The ESPN College Football Podcast is presented by Allstate. Save money like a champion with Allstate. Visit allstate.com or call an agent for a quote today. Championship savings for the win.
Is it a touchdown? Yes!
The ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Joey Galloway and Kevin Agande.
Good Thursday morning. Welcome to the College Football Podcast. It is December 9th. Kevin Agande here with you. Joey Galloway standing by as we will talk to him and we will empty the notebook with David Hale. Two things I want to mention before we get to those two guys. First, watch NBA Today, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. Or listen to the show as a podcast. And listen to ESPN's newest podcast, Swagoo and Perk, led by Marcus Spears, Swagoo, and Kendrick Perkins, K-Perk. Love those two guys. New episodes every Tuesday morning. Check them out. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Now it's time for Joey, and we switch up roles in the beginning. Joey, take it away.
Welcome to the podcast, Kevin Agande. It's been a great weekend of college football. Got through the championship week, and we got to the rankings, Kev. Are you happy that a Power 5 team finally got in, or are you like, yeah, doesn't really matter?
Yeah, I'm happy. And by the way, I love this. I love switching roles here. This is fantastic. You never really start asking a question as a yes, no. We'll learn that, Joey, as we go along.
I've never heard you give a yes, no, so I felt comfortable. I'm good.
So I will say that there was some turmoil, of course, all season. Every week there was a topical thing. The committee in the end got it right. I think Cincinnati deserves to be in the fourth spot, definitely ahead of Notre Dame. I found it interesting Sunday, you know, the discussion after what we saw on Saturday from Alabama was, you know, it comes down to who deserves the one seed, Alabama or Michigan. And that seemed to be the consensus talking point. In the morning while we did our 3-hour show leading into the noon unveil. But when we had you on and you came in studio, which I wish we had you longer, you were only in there for one segment. You specifically had Georgia number two, which I found interesting. And by the way, Alabama number one, Georgia number two. It doesn't matter because 2-3 anyway. Right. But I did want to get your thoughts on why you felt like Georgia should just drop one spot and Michigan should be at three.
I just felt that, and again, like you said, it doesn't actually matter, but if you're going week by week and going over this, Georgia has literally been number one. And I would say in the years of doing this, I think, 8 years now, I don't know that we've gone through a season where a team has been by far and away number one.
Mm-hmm.
With nobody even in the picture, nobody even in the ballpark, so far and away, number one, we just stopped talking about it. It was, here's Georgia. And the only conversation we were having was who else is there? Like who else is left? And so if you do that and you lose one game to an Alabama team that we have seen when they get their A game, like when they bring their fastball, they're as good as anybody we've seen. So mm-hmm. I this has been my track record for years. I don't react as much as a lot of my colleagues, where like on a week to week basis, people will like move, like make good, like big moves. You go from 1 to 4, 2 to 4 by like not doing a whole lot. And then I'm slower to react. Only dropped in one spot. Didn't matter. They lost to number three in the country. I'm fine with that.
Any concern, though, is how they lost, right? Like, there's certain ways of losing, and it wasn't on a final play. It was up 10-0, then completely blow that lead, and the defense looks lost. And Nick just says, all right, we're not going to go to your strength. We're just going to throw. We're not going to run the football. We're going to avoid that, and we've got the best quarterback on the field, and we're gonna win this way, regardless of whatever you do. I don't care about the defensive hype coming in. We're gonna do it the way we want to do it. Especially a week after giving up 7 sacks, they give up no sacks this Bama line. Are you concerned about how Georgia looked?
They lost to the Heisman Trophy winner. It ain't like they lost to some rinky-dink quarterback or some okay quarterback. They lost to the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback who did so while playing behind an offensive line that has been downright terrible at times. And so, again, when I look at that and I say their body of work over an entire season counts to me. Who's favored in the Georgia-Michigan game?
Georgia, but I think the line's 7.5.
So I'm not the only person that Georgia's a better football team. That's what I'm saying. We get caught in the moment, in the weekend, and say today they are better because they had it like, hey, look, when Vegas agrees, typically speaking, Vegas knows what you're talking about.
Now, I get that. I guess what I'm just trying to say is that this was the chance for Georgia to get over that hump, right? Now, yeah, they may get another opportunity.
Absolutely.
The mental game plays such a big role. Where are you with the quarterback play? And I know a lot of people are going to get upset when they hear this because it's like, it wasn't Stetson Bennett's fault. It wasn't his fault. You know, it was Georgia's defense. You could have multiple issues here, right? And Bennett has a certain responsibility. As that game was playing out, Georgia's defense was giving up big plays, but like then Bennett's job is to find a way to answer back, right? And he hasn't been tested all season. Are you concerned about that when it comes to, hey, now it's down to four teams and 2 games, and now the pressure's really on a guy like that who has to kind of get over this kind of, I hate using the word demon, but the whole Georgia program and Kirby getting over this Bama demon.
This Stetson Bennett, JT Daniels conversation is very, very interesting to me, Kev. But it's interesting deeper than just JT Daniels and Stetson Bennett. This stuff where us experts start picking quarterbacks for a team always amazes me. You know why it amazes me, Kev? Because we are sitting at a desk watching film, watching games, developing an opinion. When you're talking about picking a starting quarterback, you would literally have to say, hey, I think that I know more than Kirby Smart and his staff. I, from a distance, think I know more than the guys that are with these two kids every single day, through a spring, through every practice, through every meeting, through every huddle. We are not there, and we are telling these guys, hey, look, that other guy over there, he's the better guy for your team to win a game. And not just that, Kev. Their lives depend on winning football games. Kirby Smart's livelihood depends on winning football games. So when they make a decision, whether it's Dan Mullen at Florida with his 2-quarterback situation, when they choose a guy to play in a game, I am willing to accept that guy gives them the best chance to win the game. Flat out. I don't think I know more than they do from where I sit. With that being said, Stetson Bennett has played well. Now, you're asking Stetson Bennett to make a comeback against an Alabama team that is playing lights out with the Heisman Trophy winner on the other side in a situation you haven't seen all season long. I don't come away from that and be like, oh, Stetson Bennett's awful. Mm-hmm. Get him out of there. There's not many quarterbacks in the country that were coming in and leading that team out of that situation.
I will say this, and let's not forget, too, that the best defensive player, Georgia's defense as a unit is the best in the country, but the best defensive player on the field is on the other side of Bama, Will Anderson, who's just a freak show.
Who should be in New York instead of the other guy, but I'm not.
I want to talk to you about that in a second, but I bring this conversation up to you, not saying that JT Daniels is the better option. Like my question to you was not, hey, how come they didn't go to JT Daniels? My question to you is the concern about dealing with adversity over the next 3 weeks, because Michigan's defense is still going to bring the pressure. You got the two ends of Jabo and Hutchinson who are fantastic. Now, I'll be curious to see what Georgia looks like and specifically, do they run heavy in this game? Because you're going to have to kind of make Stetson Bennett a little more comfortable. Are you concerned about Stetson Bennett's mindset? That's what I'm asking right now. I'm not asking we need a quarterback change.
Kev, I had to get that off my chest.
Got it.
Because I've had to sit and listen to the whole JT, even on Sunday, in the studio, not just the guys on my desk, but the other guys that were in the studio, there is a debate and an argument on JT Daniels being the better guy, the better quarterback to help Georgia win. So, Kev, that's been building up for me.
Got it.
Not just in this case, but in every year, Kev, and I know you've seen it too.
Totally.
We always think that we can, from a desk, pick the quarterback that's going to help another team win, when literally we haven't been to one practice, hadn't been to one meeting, hadn't been in one huddle. It's impossible to do. So now when you talk about this game and this situation, obviously Georgia wants to run the ball. I mean, that has been what they do, not just in this season, but in past seasons. They're a run first offense. And when they can't run, not just can Stetson Bennett do it, When you're in a situation, Kev, and your offense is built a certain way, your team is built a certain way, and you play a team that takes away your fastball and makes you beat them with your secondary or third thing that you do better, it's tough for a young team to do. From a mindset standpoint, if you're not built that way. The reason why the New England Patriots are so good and have been so good for years, Bill Belichick makes you beat him with your second or third best thing you do.
Exactly.
He's going to take away the best thing you do. He's coming in, taking that away. And let's see if you can beat us doing your second or third best thing. And so you take Georgia and you slow down that run. Now your entire mindset has changed. If you're Georgia, you're looking at a defense that has been lights out. Were they giving up a touchdown a game?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I think coming in, it was just about 7 points. And now after that game, it's now 9.5. Yep.
Yeah. So you're literally watching the immovable object get moved. And you're like this, hey, Stetson Bennett, let's go. Go fix this. Go take care of this. Not that easy to do.
Let's get to the conversation. I mean, you already gave him the Heisman. And I think everybody, when you look at the odds, Bryce Young's performance on Saturday, phenomenal. He'll be in New York on Saturday, of course. We have never seen an Alabama quarterback ever take home the Heisman. Just think about that over the last 4 to 5 years, all the numbers and you know, the Mac Jones, the Tua Tagovailoa, the stuff that they've done through the years. But history will be made on Saturday. You mentioned the invite. We'll go in alphabetical order. Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan. Kenny Pickett from Pitt. C.J. Stroud from Ohio State. And Bryce Young from Alabama. They're the ones, the top four, that got the invite. Your thoughts on this group of four. And listen, this is not a slight to those guys, but There's going to be a growing consensus on a lot of people who believe Will Anderson, who is ridiculous as a sophomore. He'll get another shot next year along with Bryce Young. Will Anderson's the best defensive player in the country. Your thoughts on Aiden Hutchinson going instead of Will Anderson?
That is one of those things that it doesn't necessarily matter to me. You know what I mean? It's like Georgia 1, Michigan. I mean, Georgia 2, Michigan 3. Whether you reverse them doesn't matter. I thought Will Anderson Jr. was a better player I thought he's more dominant in games. I thought he took over games. But, you know, even on Sunday, Herb Street even said he thought Aiden Hutchinson should absolutely be in New York. So there is like a split, you know what I mean? People love one, but I don't think it's you love one more and you don't like the other guy.
Yeah.
You have them like right there together.
Yeah.
And so I'm okay with it, but I do think that Will Anderson Jr. is a better defensive end and takes over the game more than Aiden Hutchinson.
I mean, just think about it. When you look at the numbers, I mean, when you watch 31, he jumps out on the film. You're just, oh my God, that guy's a man child. But 32.5 tackles for losses this season. That is insane. And we haven't even talked about the sacks, where he's mentioned the same breath as the late, great Derek Thomas. Yeah. Hutchinson, again, we always talk about the Heisman moment, right? Hutchinson, of course, the 3 sacks against Ohio State. That separates everything because you put it on a specific pedestal. I will be curious on Saturday night to see the voting breakdown, especially in the South, because Bryce Young gets so many of the votes, right? That hurts a guy like Will Anderson. Specifically, you know, like I'm sure there's going to be some people who just they can't have two Bama guys, or they didn't want to put two Bama guys, even though a year ago we saw Mac Jones and Devontae Smith in the same conversation as finalists, right?
Yeah. Kev, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
And I'm going to try to make it not a yes, no question. All right.
Great.
I'm coachable.
Progress.
Let's just say Oklahoma State were to win the Big 12 championship game against Baylor. Does the committee still leave Cincinnati at number 4?
That was a yes, no question, but there was context. It is
not. You can't say yes or no.
Does the committee still, like you set it up like that, right? There was a yes, no. Now I'm going to expand on it. Maybe the way to say is, how would you approach Oklahoma State and Cincinnati? So I can't give you a yes or no.
Here's how I do TV, Kev. Like, we're sitting in a sports bar watching TV. That's how I would ask that question, knowing that you love to talk. You're going to expand on your answer.
You're a work in progress. You're a work in progress. We're slowly. I think the committee would put Oklahoma State in over Cincinnati. And here's the reason why. When you look at specifically the wins that Oklahoma State has on their resume compared to Cincinnati, I mean, it's Notre Dame on one side, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a top 10 win, especially in South Bend. But the last 2 weeks, top 10 win against Oklahoma, top 10 win against Baylor. So I would think the committee would make the argument, look at quality of wins compared to Oklahoma State compared to Cincinnati. At least, and this is all a hypothetical. You and I are just playing it because we're not in that room. But the way we've seen the trend and the tracking, it felt like Baylor and that little 2 inches changed history here for the group of 5.
Absolutely. And so that becomes interesting to me, because we both feel the same way. And I'm quite sure that there's a lot of people across the country that feel the same way. And so now when we look at this thing and say, hey, they finally cracked through, or hey, the committee finally did it. Committee did nothing, Kev.
No.
It was decided.
That's what they did.
It was decided for them. The next team was Notre Dame. Cincinnati beat Notre Dame. They couldn't do anything else, Kev. Like, so it kind of makes me laugh to hear the sentiment of, see, we told you there was like, they were given respect and the committee was willing to do. I mean, they weren't. I mean, this was gift wrapped for the committee to not have to make a decision. Because
I may be wrong, but Joey, I may be wrong here, but I actually think Cincinnati matches up better against Alabama than Oklahoma State. I could be wrong,
100%.
But I think so.
Actually, Kev, I agree with that. And I think that Cincinnati is a better team than Oklahoma State.
I agree.
I do.
Yep.
And honestly, like, I was hoping for Oklahoma State to win the game, because I wanted the committee to come out and say Cincinnati is a better football team, because they are. And in a head-to-head on a neutral ground, I would pick Cincinnati to beat Oklahoma State.
I agree.
I don't think they would have done it, though.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, and I think the committee was like, whew, thank goodness we do not have to make that decision.
That's a great point. Because honestly, the secondary of Cincinnati matches up much better. And I know Oklahoma State has a really good defense, but there's a better quarterback in Cincinnati, better running back in Cincinnati, better playmakers in Cincinnati. The physicality there is with the Bearcats. And Boog and I were talking about this yesterday. I'm not saying Cincinnati is going to beat Alabama, but if Cincinnati handles the first and second punches from Bama, and it's a close game, one-score game heading into the fourth quarter, I can't wait. I kind of want to see how both teams respond, because we don't know what the momentum is going to be like for 18 to 22-year-old kids. No one knows. How are you going to handle that adversity? One thing I do know is I trust Desmond Ridder because he's been there and he has the experience. Again, I could be wrong. Bama could win by double digits, but I kind of want to see it a one-score game heading into fourth quarter to see how Bama responds, because Cincinnati is not going to back down.
It's unfortunate the way we look at things. Like, so for example, if Cincinnati happens to get blown out, there will be so many of us that'll be like, see, they didn't deserve to be in.
Which is absolutely not fair.
But it's, you know as well as I do, that will be what happens after, because that's just what we do. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame gets blown out, they didn't deserve to be in. Michigan State got blown out, they didn't deserve to be in. Like that is just what
Washington gets blown out, they didn't deserve to be in, right?
That's just what people do. But this one has so much more weight on it because it's the Power Five team that a lot of people don't respect and don't want to get in the first place. There is a lot of pressure on Cincinnati to make this a game, because if they don't, it will only fuel the fire for years to come on they didn't deserve to be in, they don't play the schedules. So until you expand this thing to 34 games, Kev.
34. Hey, Kev, 34.
You know this thing is going to keep growing. And Kev, it's going to keep growing to one point, me and you'll be calling one of these playoff games and run out of people.
I can't wait for that. By the way, this celebratory moment is brought to you by Allstate. Save money like a champ with Allstate. Visit allstate.com or call an agent for a quote today. Championship savings for the win. Before we go, Joey, let's recap here.
Hold on. Did we get sponsored?
Yeah, we've been sponsored. Thanks for paying attention. Yes.
How come I've never heard that?
We did it last week. I fooled you. I blended it in when we went to our picks.
Hey, you must have did that right before you said, welcome in, Joey Galloway. I didn't know that.
Taylor, you know, he's doing everything he can to avoid the final standings here before we get to it. We're not going to do bowl picks today. I think we're going to let this breathe a little bit before we get to the bowls. But Taylor, do you want to give us a recap on how we finished here in the regular season?
Certainly. So last week was a tough week for both of you. Kevin, you went 1-6 with your picks. Joey, you went 2-5, but not enough to close the gap. Kevin is going to finish +2 on the season. Yes. And Joey, just an epic collapse down the stretch. I mean, all the trash talk, I feel like it kind of came back to bite you on this one.
Let me ask you a question. Are we done doing podcasts?
No, we got more. You're not going away. Yeah, we got plenty more.
Well, it's kind of weird to me how you guys keep talking the final standings as if the games are over.
Final regular season. Then we're going to get to the bowl picks.
I feel like they got to be separate.
So that still counts.
Yes, that'll still count.
It's weird. Yeah. Because let's just say Bama wins another game. Like, say they win the semi, that'll add on to their current record, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I was just wondering how that worked. Wait, you guys are talking final standings.
Take some L's, though, right now. You're two back. Take some L's. I go 1-6, and I'm still feeling really good after the week.
that's like saying I made the playoff, Kev, but I'm not happy that I'm ranked number 4 that I got in. Hey, I'm in, Kev.
You're in, but you're trailing by 2. Looking forward to it.
I'm willing to bet you a Philly cheesesteak that I win this thing. How about that?
Where are you getting the cheesesteak? That's what I want to know. That's
don't
the
worry key. About that. Hey, look, yeah. don't worry about that.
Because
hey.
I don't want no steak and cheese. That hey, stuff's garbage.
Hey, Vegas doesn't ask where you get your money from that you pay them. They just take it in. So.
All right, be well, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Hi, Kip.
It's time to empty the notebook on the ESPN College Football Podcast.
One of my favorite reporters, that is David Hale, ESPN.com, joining us now as we take a look, a closer look at the ACC. Now, the ACC conversation, which is weird, doesn't feature Clemson and the playoff. Usually around this time, we are talking about matchups and Clemson in the same breath as Alabama. But that doesn't mean this conference has been very busy in the last week, headlined, of course, by the changes at Miami with Mario Cristobal. And of course, an AD change there, and then some changes at Pitt that we are seeing develop, and then some changes, something that, you know, that Dabo's avoided at Clemson, major changes to his coaching staff. So, David, let's first talk about the Miami situation. It feels like finally, after years of talking about it and the frustration, they are now putting their money where their mouth is, and the Mario Cristobal hire, your reaction to that, and what have you learned the last week on how that developed?
You know, it's fascinating because I think the biggest takeaway for me beyond, like, the actual upgrading personnel with Mario Cristobal and with Dan Radakovich, who appears to be headed to Miami as the athletics director after leaving Clemson, those guys both left really good jobs. And you don't go to Miami from a really good job unless you are given some real assurances that life is going to be different at Miami than it has been for, 20 plus years now. So to me, it's as much that, yes, you're getting good people. That's great. And I think this was a long work in progress, particularly with Cristobal, where this has been going on for weeks of sort of semi-negotiations. And I think some people, if you were at all a fan of Manny Diaz, would want to point some fingers at how poorly that was executed on Miami's part. But the end of the day, Miami has two really good, successful people who wanted to be at Miami and wanted to be at Miami despite all of the other stuff that has gone on at Miami over the years. I think they have been sold on, look, we have a vision now. This is what we want to develop, and you guys are key to making this happen. Because if it was, hey, we're the same Miami that we have been the last four times we've hired a head coach, you want to come on in here, I'm not sure that it would have been enough to make any of this happen. I know that Cristobal and Radakovich both had some sincere concerns about the level of support that they were going to get and the level of influence that they were going to have, or how many other voices would be involved in decisions as well. I think this wouldn't be happening if they hadn't, if those concerns had not been alleviated.
And Radakovich, as you mentioned, leaving a Clemson program that is the prime example when we talk about constant change. They are the polar opposite. Stability has been the storyline with Dabo. I mean, think about the revolving door of assistants when it comes to Nick Saban's success in Bama over the last decade, specifically at Clemson. Dabo, when he looks around, he had consistency. And I know Jeff Scott was there before, but like Tony Elliott on the OC side, and now Brett Venables on the DC side, and you got an AD that you're lockstep in. Like, well, how's Dabo feeling today? Because potentially Tony Elliott, who's interviewed for the Duke job, interviewed for the Virginia job, Venables is now at Oklahoma. How's Dabo handling this?
It's an interesting thing because, the comparison with Dabo always ends up being Nick Saban because of where those two programs have been over the last 5-6 years in terms of success. And as you said, it's been a revolving door in Alabama, and Nick Saban is bringing in big name after big name, from Lane Kiffin to Steve Sarkisian to Bill O'Brien. And Dabo has really approached every hire, and he's not had many, as you said, from a very different perspective, where he goes internal, internal, internal. So the last guy that Dabo hired on his staff that is not either a Clemson guy or a guy who he played with, worked with at Alabama, was Brent Venables. And that was way back at the end of the 2011 season. So we've gone a decade without him hiring someone who is outside that very narrow circle of influence around him. And certainly the early implications of some of the changes here, whether it's Brent Venables leaving, it would sound like they might be in a promote from within scenario there. And if Tony Elliott goes, you would certainly expect Brandon Streeter, the quarterback's coach who called plays in last year's playoff game when Tony was out with COVID, would probably be the expected hire there. So we're right back to where Nick Saban goes outside the program to find the biggest name he can find to run his offense or take over in those situations. Dabo's the exact opposite. He keeps the circle close. And I would not be surprised at all if that's exactly the scenario that this plays out as.
I find that fascinating, especially when, you know, and this is not a critique. It's just when we look at adaptability, that is the word everybody needs to use in college football, right? Adaptability, because when you have the transfer portal, when you have constant change with assistants and coaches, you have to be adaptable. And for Dabo to be as consistent internally, it's pretty remarkable what he has done at Clemson as a power, as we have seen attrition play a role at major programs throughout the country, regardless of who they are and what they do. And that leads us to the next question here, because the current ACC champs, Pitt, just lost their OC, Mark Whipple, who just resigned and looks like he's going to be the next Nebraska OC. Can you tell us more about that development?
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit of a head scratcher to me. I think to some extent you think, well, we just put up some big numbers with Kenny Pickett. We're going to have another quarterback next year at Pitt. Maybe it's a good time to move on. I would have thought Whipple's stock was pretty high. Nebraska's an iffy situation, you know, and you're going into a situation there where no guarantees you're making it out through the season next year, let alone long term. But a good contract with a buyout is a good contract with a buyout, and maybe you got a golden parachute to it either way. You know, Whipple has not been a guy who tended to stay at the same place for very long. I'm surprised a little bit at the landing spot here, but, you know, Pitt's going to look much different on offense. They bring back some real talented guys, particularly Jordan Addison at receiver, but no Mark Whipple, no Kenny Pickett. Those are the architects of what this great offense was this year. Pat Narduzzi's going to have a challenge on his hands for 2022, no doubt.
Yeah, he doesn't even get the chance. Like, he doesn't even get a week to celebrate the ACC championship, right?
Yeah.
But with success, of course, breeds the attrition that we see at major programs. You know, who would have thought, David, that we are talking right now, the way this season started at Florida State, that Norvell is the longest tenured head coach at the three major programs in the state of Florida. It to me, it just blows me away after the way Florida State started.
Well, you know, the craziest thing is I remember it wasn't too long ago when Mark Richt had the job and you know, Jimbo Fisher was there and you had Butch Davis and Lane Kiffin and Scott Frost and all these folks. And we were in Florida, hotbed of coaches. And boy, most of those didn't work out too well. It is crazy to see. And look, you asked, who's going to win the most games out of those Florida schools in 2022? I mean, you're not insane to say Florida State, which is a team that lost to Jacksonville State at the beginning of the season. It is insane to think about where we're at. Look, you look around, and I will say that the perk if you're Miami is you've got a quarterback by the name of Tyler Van Dyke, who I think is going to be an absolute superstar, and that's good for them, and they're making progress. But as we know, when you have new coaching staffs come in, we talk about attrition. That attrition level goes way up. Transfer portal has allowed it to go up even more than that. And so I wouldn't be surprised if there's a somewhat serious exodus from Miami, because there always is in these situations. You have a similar situation at Florida, and both of those places are rebuilding recruiting classes. Meanwhile, Florida State and Mike Norvell have one of their best recruiting classes coming in that they've had in a long time. I mean, it is no part of me feels good saying this, but if you're Florida State, you have to be thinking, hey, maybe we're the good guys now.
Who would have thought, especially the way September started out for the program? But it just shows you how it's evolved so much. And you're right. The one thing Mario has out the gate is a quarterback. The ACC rookie of the year in Van Dyke. And that is a big plus when it comes to coming out the gate and recruiting. And if you have the answer at quarterback, at least with the stability moving forward, plays a huge role, because that has cost Florida and Florida State over the last couple of years. David, great to have you on board with us. Wish you the best in the holiday season, but thanks for joining us.
My pleasure as always, Kevin. Good to talk to you, bud.
Big thanks to David Hale. Always love his insight, of course, in the ACC. Big, big week for that conference with some of the major changes. Of course, Joey Galloway will work on his yes-no questions. We need more open-ended questions. It'll be a challenge, because I'm not sure Joey takes instructions well, as we saw. ESPN College Football Podcast will be back on Monday next week. Only 4 podcasts, not 5. We'll have a couple different hosting combinations, and hopefully you'll hear from Booger and me in the Bahamas, as we will call the Bahama Bowl next Friday on ESPN. And we'll see if we can peel Booger away from the blackjack table while he's enjoying it and talk some ball. You're not going to want to miss that. We'll talk to you next week.